How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. Harrison is not here with us. I traded him in for a way better guest. It's not even close. Ask anybody. This is probably objectively true at this point. Before we get to that guest, I want to remind everybody you can find the show on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. The show is not brought to you by anybody today, but make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers on SeatGeek and Mack Weldon, and then the promo code Lakers10 on betdsi.com. Let's go ahead and get to the show, though. I'm joined by Darius Soriano at Forum Blue and Gold. Darius, how are you holding up? My head is still in the clouds from last night, personally.
Is it just because of the game that your head is in the clouds, or is it something else?
Might be some NyQuil involved. but yeah, we've survived a really long off season of Larry Nance Jr. and Julius Randle conversations. We've survived a really long off season and preseason that we thought would never end, and finally, last night it all culminated in a really exciting victory over the Houston Rockets. I wrote my article today. I tried to kind of stay grounded on Forum Blue and Gold, but I wasn't able to stay grounded. Were you able to kind of take a step back and say, all right, the Lakers aren't going to win 82 games this year?
Well, of course, because they're going to win 84, right? No, but in all seriousness, the game last night was just, I think, as a basketball fan, just to sort of finally see these young guys get out there and play their game and sort of put it all together and sort of battle back from adversity and you know, down the stretch, get some defensive stops and score some buckets themselves and come out on top against a team that they were an underdog against, a team with veteran players, a team with a guy who some are touting as an MVP candidate, and for good reason. Look at his line last night with James Harden, and to sort of see them overcome all of that and play well enough down the stretch to pull out a win, that was just great entertainment for fans.
It felt like we exercised some demons in that process, right? Where, like, the Lakers, I noticed when the Rockets kind of started pulling away, the Lakers and the fans there kind of started saying to themselves, oh, here we go again. You know, we know how this game ends. And especially when they go into halftime down, you know, a few points, and they come out and you're thinking to yourself, all right, maybe they can get, you know, back into the game and maybe they can stick around for long enough to make this interesting. But they come out and Luke makes some really nice adjustments, both defensively and offensively, I thought. He actually played Jordan Clarkson for one thing, which was nice in the second half. But you wrote an article, a really good article on your 10 thoughts from opening night. What was the one thing that you would say stuck out to you as something that the Lakers can really build on, right? It's only a one-game sample size, so it's not like you're going to be able to say, this is definitely, you know, the one-game sample size is going to extend to the rest of the season. Was there anything that you know, you noticed as a preseason trend you'd hope you see, and then you'd hope to the Lakers can continue to build on as such?
Well, you know, I saw a lot of positive trends last night. I think that for long term, it's, for me at least, it's sort of hard to gauge how much of the improvements that we saw offensively were because the Lakers are sort of trending upwards, which I think they are, but how far upwards is sort of depends on quality of opponent somewhat, right? And so Houston does not have a good defense. So I'm not sure if some of the gains that we saw offensively on Wednesday night or opening night are sustainable or not. I'm not sure if, you know, if individually, you know, Brandon Ingram's not going to hit 66% of his shots each night, and Clarkson may not hit, you know, so many threes. And yeah, right. I'm not expecting too many 23-point second halves, you know, or some of these individual performances. I'm not sure how much staying power we're going to see in terms of those numbers, but I think more than anything, I think that the general vibe of the team is something that is sustainable, mm-hmm. right? Which is sort of this competing on almost every possession, the amount of pressure they're going to try to put on defenses in terms of and leveraging their athleticism, leveraging their youth, just the joy that they play with in general. Yes. I think that those are things that night to night we can expect to see for the most part. And for fans, I think that that's one of the things that's really driving that excitement.
Right. I felt like watching that game, and obviously – and I brought this up in a past show with John Ireland, and I compared them, you know, this kind of group and the vibe around this group to the 90s Lakers, right, where they were scrappier, you know, there was no real vibe. You never really felt like they were going to actually win a title, but there was, you know, they were fun. They were fun going, and they were fun to watch play. This group there, there's nobody is really thinking that they're going to win a title this year, but it was just fun to watch those guys play. It didn't matter at all that the team isn't going to win a championship. It was just really fun to go out there and watch these guys play. Do you see the connection there between the 90s Lakers and what we might be looking at here with these guys?
I think there's some overlap there. I think mostly that comes from the presence of so many young players who are supposed to be contributors, mm-hmm. right? Like, so those 90s teams, those Lake Show teams, right? Mm-hmm. They definitely had some key veterans. Vlade was on that team. Cedric Sabalos was on that team. Eldon Campbell was on that team. But for about a 3 or 4 year period, they also drafted a handful of guys who ended up either exceeding expectations or playing up to their draft pick status. Mm-hmm. And when you have guys like Van Exel and Eddie Jones, who sort of play this exciting style of basketball, and then you throw in a workman-like guy like a George Lynch, and then sort of a shooter, scorer type like Anthony Peeler, and then you sort of fast forward to today, and you've got a guy like Russell who plays this exciting brand of basketball, and then a guy like Larry Nance who sort of mixes those highlight plays with sort of a workman-like game, and then Julius Randle and Jordan Clarkson, and now Brandon Ingram, and you've got, you know, all the, like, sort of these waves of young players who now meshing with a guy like Lou Williams and a Luol Deng and a Timofey Mozgov, that you've got this really good blend of veterans and young players, and that's exciting. It's exciting to watch young players sort of come up and ply their craft, and who play like young players. You know what I mean?
Especially millennial young players. Like,
and for good and for bad, right? Mm-hmm. And so in the piece that you wrote earlier, you wrote about, you know, Russell sort of hitting a three-pointer and then also like throwing a behind the back pass away, right? And so in the closing minutes, Russell Russell had a couple of really boneheaded plays, right? Mm-hmm. He had that play where he threw that behind the back pass. It ended up being a turnover. And luckily, I think on that next possession down, the Lakers got a block, and then so they didn't score. Mm-hmm. But then Russell also pushed the ball with under a minute left. Yeah, and then
39 seconds like left.
Like, right, like, so, okay, is he just pushing the ball up so he can pull it back and then restart? It's like, no, he nope, – wait, where's he going?
Just going to dribble it off his foot. Don't mind me.
So those things are – those plays are exciting too. They're exciting in the wrong kind of way, mm-hmm. right? And so with those types of plays are meshed with him sort of – you know, that scramble play and Mozgov throws it behind his back and then Russell hits a three and he turns to the crowd and sort of extends his arms mm-hmm. with that sort of like, are you not entertained mixed with like finally, mm-hmm. finally we got something good to happen here, right? Because that was at the end of like, I want to say a two or three possession stint when nothing had gone right in terms of shots falling.
Mm-hmm.
And so night in and night out, I think you're going to see that dichotomy of good and bad, and that's going to keep fans engaged, which I think is something that fans have really been longing for these last few years.
I compared it. So it was funny. It's for one thing, when you were talking about those 90s Lakers and you brought up Vlade Divac and Cedric Ceballos, that it's funny that now at those very same positions, you have Timofey Mozgov and Luol Deng, right? Which is interesting. I guess Ceballos was more of a scoring 2/3 than Deng being more of a, you know, kind of stopgap. If he gets a shot, he gets a shot 3/4. But the other thing we were talking before the show, and I was saying that outside of over the last couple of years, I would say the two games that stick out the most to me were obviously Kobe's last game. Right, that was exciting for all the reasons that you would think it was going to be exciting. And then also when the Lakers somehow beat the Warriors, which I think it was in March of last year. And yet last night, I don't think it surpassed the Kobe game because the Kobe game was so insane. But I would say it surpassed the Warriors game for me because it felt like the Lakers could legitimately build with what we're seeing there. A different excitement comes out when it feels like sustainable excitement. Whereas when we were watching that Warriors game, we were kind of like, it was more of like a holy crap, how are the Lakers actually doing this? How are they going to mess this up? Last night I was watching like, hey, those pick and roll sets look really clean. Wow, those sideline out of bounds plays those look really nice. Look at the halftime adjustments. That might be something that we can watch moving forward. Are you following me on the two different kinds of excitement there?
Oh, yeah. So this goes back to just what we were talking about a few minutes ago, right? Which is that so much of watching how young players play is sort of the formation of good habits. Mm-hmm. And just like you were talking about things that you can build on. And one of the things that Luke Walton has talked about most of the summer, either explicitly or sort of with veiled comments, was wanting to sort of rebuild the culture of the Lakers, and not like what it means to be a Laker, but establish a culture of winning basketball and break the team of some of the bad habits that they've sort of accumulated over the years and instill it with the types of good habits that when repeated night after night are going to help you win basketball games. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's very realistic and understanding that young players don't pick these habits up and then one day, you know, just like, oh, one day now moving forward every day, it's going to be like this, right?
Yeah,
like,
yep.
Like I think that he understands that it's going to take some time, but that the goal ultimately is to get these guys playing, you know, quote unquote, the right way more often than not, which is going to lead to the types of on-court success that we want to see as fans and from an organizational standpoint, what they want to see, you know, to ultimately rebuild themselves into a contender. And so I think what we saw last night with the Rockets game was sort of baby steps in that direction, right? More ball movement, more player movement, being locked in more defensively, a key stop here, a key stop there, and you build on those things possession by possession, game by game, and then hopefully stretch by stretch until you start to become a really good basketball team. The Lakers are not there yet, but yeah, you can see the holes in the ground and the seeds being planted, right?
Yeah, they've tilled the ground, basically.
So that in itself is great to see. It's exciting to see, and it's what sort of inspires fans to want to watch every night.
The other thing that I noticed, because you brought up the defensive aspect of it, the other thing that I really noticed was how, like, it's easy to get hyped after a big offensive play, right? It's easy to get hyped after Larry Nance Jr. murders somebody and all of their ancestors that preceded them, right? It's easy to, after a big three, to say, all right, yeah, that's awesome. But what I really noticed, it was a play that kind of sticks out to me. Brandon Ingram enters the game, and his first matchup was James Harden. It was kind of an isolation play at the end of the shot clock, and Ingram forces Harden into like a fallaway shot in the corner, where it drew, I think it was, it barely drew iron. It was nearly a shot clock violation, and the guys around Ingram, you could really see, kind of got up and they're like, "Hey, attaboy, Rook." And rewarding each other for that kind of thing wasn't something that we noticed over the last couple of years, mostly because it didn't happen very often. But I think they know what to look for in what's the kind of basketball play, like you said, that's going to win them basketball games. What did you see from Ingram on both sides of the ball? Because he kind of fell, I wouldn't say by the wayside, but I don't think people quite grasped how good he was last night for a rookie in that setting.
Well, he's only 19. When they brought him in, and he played backup point guard. So I think the lineup that was on the court was him and Lou Williams. It might have been Nick Young. No, I think it was him and Lou Williams and Jordan Clarkson, and then probably Larry Nance and Tarik Black.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
When he came into the game, he was probably doing 60% of the ball handling. And he played with, and I wrote this today, that he just plays with a poise that sort of belies his age. Like, if you just saw him out there, you might think he was younger based off of his frame and how skinny he is, right? He definitely does not come off as like, oh, he's got his grown man strength at this point. Mm-hmm. But the poise that he plays with and the demeanor that he carries himself with definitely projects to be a much older and more experienced player. And so I think that, to me, if anything stands out, it's that first. And then you see all the hints of all the skill that he possesses, right? And so there was that possession that he had offensively where he's got the ball, it's sort of coming up late on the shot clock. He sort of gets into Corey Brewer's body a little bit. He does, a fake one way and then a turnaround jumper, and he makes that. Mm-hmm. So even to me, a play like that is sort of symbolic of, okay, everything is breaking down around me. What can I do to make a play? And then he's able to make that play. Defensively, I thought that he did mostly well. He did have a couple of nice possessions against Harden, but otherwise he was mostly guarding guys who weren't like primary offensive threats. So maybe he was on Corey Brewer for a little while. He was on Trevor Ariza for a little while. Those are easier covers, especially for a guy like Ingram, who does well and is typically engaged off of the ball and has these great sort of physical qualities that help him as an off-ball defender, even as more so maybe even than as an on-ball one. Mm-hmm. But I think overall, like I said, the thing that stands out or stood out last night and continues to stand out for me through the preseason and then through the first game was just the level of maturity that he plays with. And the high level of decision making that he exhibits on a possession to possession basis. And those are things that really can't be taught so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things that can be taught, tendencies of players and things, you know, so he closes out too hard on Corey Brewer. Like, he's going to learn that that's not the thing to do. You know, tracking particular guys well off of the ball, how close he needs to stay. These are things that he's going to learn as he kind of gets a cycle through the league. But just for a rookie in his first real NBA game, he did so many things just at a solid to a plus level, and that's all that you could really hope for.
Exactly. I'm at that point right now where I wouldn't necessarily be, you know, there's nothing that I would see last night that if the Lakers don't play very well tomorrow, that I would say, oh man, it's all back to square one. You know, there was a lot that I saw that I feel like even if they don't play very well tomorrow, or well, I guess when everybody's listening to this, it will be tonight against the Utah Jazz, which is a tougher matchup because of their abilities defensively. Even if they struggle, I'm just going to say to myself, well, yeah, that's how the season's going to go. They're going to struggle some nights, and some matchups are better than others.
Yeah, I think that when it comes right down to it, so much more this season than the last two seasons for sure. It's going to be so much more about the process than the results. You know, I don't want to harp a lot on Byron Scott or his tenure with the Lakers, but one of my sort of go-to criticisms during that time period was just that the Lakers were bad at process and they were also bad at results, right?
It's not a great combo.
And sometimes, you know, sometimes you can be bad at process and be good at results, right? Like, look at about, you know, 1,000 of the baskets that Kobe Bryant scored for examples of that. And sometimes you can be really good at process and get bad results, right? And I think what the Lakers are really going for is continue to pound away at refining and getting better at the process. And as you do that, you will start to see the results on the floor. And so there are going to be fits and starts with a team that is this young, or even a team that relies on veterans who are not necessarily going to be consistent from night to night, right? Mm-hmm. Like a Lou Williams or a Nick Young or a Lou Alding or a Mozgov. These guys are going to be good some nights, and other nights they're going to be bad. Guess what? That's the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
So, but as long as they're trying to do the right things, that's what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And so I think last night, here's one example that I think is a perfect example of that. I say last night, but let's just say Wednesday against Houston.
Mm-hmm.
is that, so James Harden had what, like 37 points and 17 assists or something crazy.
All the stats.
And Nick Young gets a lot of blame for that, right? Like, there was a lot of blame sort of going at Nick Young on Twitter and social media, like, oh, Nick Young didn't play well. He played too many minutes. He shot 3 of 12. But what I saw was Nick Young picking up James Harden full court. I saw him shadowing him off the ball. I saw him denying passing lanes. I saw him trying to fight through screens. I saw him when he was forced to switch and a big man would switch on to Harden. I saw Young battle with the big guy to try to keep him off of spots and getting deep position in the post. I saw him trying to box out. Basically, I saw Nick Young expending a ton of energy in ways that Nick Young never spends energy.
Right. Another thing that I noticed, because there's working hard and being dumb, right? And I know, and sometimes somebody who isn't accustomed to working like that will make dumb mistakes because, one, they're tired because they aren't working like that usually, and two, because they just aren't, those habits aren't there. But there was a play where it was semi-late in the game. It was in the second half. And James Harden had the ball on the right wing, kind of close to the corner. And he faked Nick Young. And Young kind of bit a little bit. And he knew that if he kept, you know, if he really jumped, that Harden was going to jump into him and draw that foul. Holy cow. Talking about Nick Young playing defense apparently isn't something that my voice is used to either. But what I noticed was Nick Young or he you know, he jumped up and he noticed, like, as he was jumping, oh, I gotta catch myself, and he moved himself away from him. And that's not a play that Young makes over the last couple of years. That's not a play that he makes over the extent of his career.
Yeah. And so plays like that, or plays in general where you see a guy working so hard and trying to do the right things, and then maybe Harden draws a foul on that play, or maybe on some of the other plays, Harden still beats Young and he still scores it, or he dishes and assists. Those things happen throughout the night. Look at Harden's stat line, mm-hmm. right? But I think if you go back and you watch the tape, or if you go back and you ask the coaches, what did they like about Nick Young's night? They would mention all of these things that he really did well. And sometimes it just didn't work. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he was playing against such a great player. And so to bring that back to my original point is that I think more nights than not, if the Lakers coaches and organization see the players trying to execute the game plan on the floor and really being attentive to what they're being asked to do, that they will take the results because they're going to be happy with the process, and that's going to be win or lose. And I'm pretty sure that if you ask Luke Walton that question every single day for the rest of the season, he will give you the same answer. Because what he's trying to do, and this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is instill these habits in players on the right way to play the game. And ultimately, if you do that enough, you're going to have success. And that's one of the reasons why I'm excited about this season. One, because that's the approach.
Mm-hmm.
That's being taken, whereas, you know, in previous seasons it clearly was not.
Yep.
or at least it did not come off that way, that was the approach. And two, that the young players that the Lakers have seem to genuinely want to be great. They mm-hmm. want to improve, they want to learn, and they're now being put in a position where A, they respect the coach and the coach respects them, and that sort of relationship being reciprocated between them means that the coach is going to continue to get the best out of them mm-hmm. on a day-to-day basis. And when you've got players as talented as some of the young players that the Lakers have, that's only going to lead to good things.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so that kind of leads us into our next segment here. And basically, this segment was born at 3 a.m. on yesterday morning, the night before the Lakers were going to play their first game. I was up because I have insomnia, and this is the stuff that you do when you have insomnia. I started listing expectations, basically player by player, with hopes with all these young guys. And old guys. I think I talked about the old guys, too. So what we're going to do is I'm going to read the tweet to you, and then you can tell me if I'm crazy or if I'm on the right track or whatever. And generally speaking, I'm crazy for listing these things at 3 a.m. on a Wednesday night, on a Tuesday night. So the first one, D'Angelo Russell should get some all-star buzz. It's mostly due to the Lakers bump, you know, the Lakers best player bump that they get in the voting. But still, I think you'll get some of that talk as the first half of the season goes along.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. So let me say that I think he's going to get a lot of recognition. We saw that already during the preseason sort of general manager's poll, as him sort of being picked as a guy who's ready to have a breakout season.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I think that he's already sort of on the radar of people around the league as someone who's really talented and who's going to start to show more on a night-to-night basis how much talent is really there. I just also think, though, that playing guard in the NBA
in the
and then
Conference.
Playing guard in the Western Conference makes it so that even if people are recognizing that, fans especially, that he's still going to be behind a lot of the really name guys. You know, so if you were to tell me, oh, D'Angelo Russell finished, you know, seventh in Western Conference All-Star guard voting, right? Like, that's probably be really good.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. I don't think he comes anywhere near it. But I think, he'll tally a few more votes than people would have thought this time last year.
Yeah, so if you were to tweet out D'Angelo Russell will get more All-Star votes than Tony Parker, right?
That'd be interesting.
Right? Like, will he? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. Like, even that sounds a little bit crazy.
Yeah,
but
Tony Parker.
but I do think. But to give you some credit, the as Harrison's probably like, don't give him any credit. but that Laker bounce is that really does exist.
Yeah. No, I mean. Yeah, it was shocking that Jeremy Lin didn't get an All-Star spot at some point or get closer to getting an All-Star spot, because you had the Chinese bump and then you had the Laker bump, and somehow our previous coach mangled that situation up so badly he still wasn't able to get it. All right, on to the next one. I said, if the Lakers are really going to mold Clarkson into a six-man, they absolutely have to have an idea of who might be better to who they could acquire to start ahead of them over the next, you know, umpteen years.
So, yes, I think that's true. I don't think it necessarily has to be a specific player. I do think it needs to be sort of an archetype in terms of what you want from that specific position. You know, we could have this long conversation about team building, which we'll avoid for right now. But I think long term, the Lakers will need to look at the number of guys who are going to be on the team and be playing major minutes, who like to have the ball in their hands, and then start to form lineups appropriately around those guys.
It's really forward thinking that they're looking at Clarkson and saying, this is what he's best at. We just have to get to a point. We have to build our roster to a point where we can utilize him as such. That's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, I think that, well, you know, if you were to ask me a year ago or even a year and a half ago what I thought Jordan Clarkson's best role would be, I would have told you that on a bad to middling team, Jordan Clarkson can be a starting guard and probably be one of your key ball handlers and key scorers, and you're putting the ball in his hands, you know, to have sort of that in between 22 and 26 usage percentage, right?
Yep.
But doing that as a starter. But on a good team, he's going to be sort of this 22 to 26 minute player and get the ball a lot on the second unit and sort of terrorize these bench units who are playing basically guys similar to him.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Who aren't better. Who aren't as good. Yeah.
Well, or also guys who are the same archetype as him.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so look around the league, and on a lot of teams, you'll see a guy like Jamal Crawford, or before he became the world champion, you know, guy that everyone loved, J.R. Smith, or before he was a Laker, Lou Williams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go around the league, and so many teams have guys just like him, guys who are really good scorers, who aren't necessarily good at defense. And Clarkson, to his credit, is getting better at defense, and he's going to torch a lot of guys who are sort of the same archetype as him. And he did that against the Rockets, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they had these guards on him who could not stay in front of him, right? And he started to get going, and once a guy like him gets going, it's hard to turn that off.
Mm-hmm. And he changed the game playing that role. All right, next one. We have Luol Deng should not start more than 55 games at small forward. If he does start more than 55 games, I would hope that a few of them he'll start at the four even, you know?
Yeah, I think that that's probably accurate. I also think, too, that ultimately, if you have a long-term vision of the Lakers, Brandon Ingram is the starting small forward, mm-hmm. right? And not only is he the starting small forward, but he's probably sort of turning into this point forward type of player who is handling the ball a lot and really being the guy that I think a lot of people would have wanted Jordan Clarkson to be,
mm-hmm.
right? The guy who allows Russell to play more off the ball and who can sort of create his own offense, but also create offense for others. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if the Lakers get to about game 60, and at that point, Deng would probably have missed a handful of games, either to get rest or maybe he got banged up, right? He banged knees in practice and he sat out preseason games. Like, I don't think the Lakers, he signed for 4 years for a bajillion dollars. Like, I don't think the Lakers are necessarily interested in saying, oh, we're going to Thibodeau you again, and mm-hmm. you've got a sprained ankle, like, get out there, mm-hmm. right? Like, they've got alternatives on the wing. If Deng gets banged up even a little bit, he can sit out, right? And mm-hmm. and so I think that just from an attrition standpoint, you combine the attrition, and then you combine it with them having a legitimate prospect behind him who should probably get some starts this year just to see what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Deng should start, you know. I think in between 55 and 60 games would probably be about the cap.
Yep. I it's kind of like an innings limit or, you know, a pitch count on a pitcher. Yes, they could hypothetically throw more, but why, you know? Especially if you have a good bullpen, just bring in the bullpen and bring in those other options.
Well, the way that I see it, too, it's sort of like the Rams, right? Like, if – and this – this Casey Keenum character, right? And so at some point, like, I'm probably disrespecting Deng by even comparing him to Casey Keenum, right? But mm-hmm. but is that even his name, Casey Keenum?
I think it's Case.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I was, you know, we're coming up on New Year's. I was, you know, thinking, you know, Casey Keenum. You know, Casey Keenum, man, is – top 100 interceptions. But at some point you're going to want to get the top pick in there to let him get his feet wet. So, mm-hmm. and I think what Walton's doing already is sort of like giving him the ball and saying, you're going to sort of help run the second unit and giving him this sort of responsibility. Now, maybe Walton just says, you know what? This is working. Like, mm-hmm. we'll do this all year, and if Deng's not going to start, then we'll start Nick Young, and we'll slide Lou Williams over to mm-hmm. shooting, right? Like, or we'll start Clarkson or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. There's lots of options there, but and maybe Ingram won't be the solution at, like, already this season, and get, you know, 25 or 30 starts mm-hmm. at small forward. But I think in the end, what you're talking about with Deng is totally right.
All right, next one. We have Julius Randle should spend at least 35% as much time at the five as he does at the four, and the higher the better.
I think 35% is probably about right.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's just over a third.
Yeah. I think that ultimately we saw it some against the Rockets, and I think as more teams play power forwards or nominal power forwards at center, then basically It's a who can you guard? You can guard this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So that guy is essentially playing center. So you're going to play center. You know, I thought that the lineup that they went to down the stretch, which I believe was Randall at center, Dang playing power forward. Then they had Ingram in there for a while, but then they took out Ingram and they brought back in Nick Young. And they had Clarkson and Russell. And to me, you know, that's where you even accentuate Randall's strengths on offense even more.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you sort of, when these guys who are sort of power forwards playing center, a lot of times they're just not going to be able to stay with Randall in the open court, especially as like a grab and go type of player.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw what he did this to Capella one time, but I mean, he really did it to Nene on that last possession where he got that big bucket. You know, they cleared out, they mm-hmm. gave him the ball, he isolated, he took him right to the front of the rim and got his bucket. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be able to do that against a lot of those sort of, oh, I'm a 8 to 12 year veteran and I'm a power forward playing center. Like, he's going to be able to do that to a lot of those guys.
Yep,
just
absolutely.
Because he's strong as a bull and you know, like I said, I've been calling him Tasmanian Randall for 2 years, and that's exactly how he is to me, man. He is just a whirlwind.
And it helps with him on the defensive side of things too, because he does have really good foot speed, especially laterally. And when you have those guys who don't do the kinds of things the typical center does, you know, the offensive rebound pressure, the pick and roll kind of stuff, where you worry really, you know, you worry about, is Randall able to get over and challenge somebody at the rim the way a typical five would be able to. On the other end of the court, if he plays the five and he goes up against somebody who is doing the same kind of thing, that works out really to his benefit. And we saw that again last night as well.
Well, yeah. So the biggest possession, the biggest defensive play of the game was clearly, I think, when Clarkson poked the ball away and then Russell dove in and got the steal, mm-hmm. right? Like, I think at that point it was a 4-point game and there was maybe like around a minute left. Mm-hmm. If Houston scores there, then the pressure's back on the Lakers. Instead, they are still up 4 and they've got the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But the two other biggest defensive plays of the game were both switches by Randall on to James Harden. One, Randall got sort of beat off the dribble and he closed and got a block from behind.
Mm-hmm.
And he blocked Harden's shot and kept the ball in bounds, and then the Lakers retained possession. And another play, Harden was isolated on him on the right sort of shoulder area, mm-hmm. right? And Harden was doing his little dance. He ended up taking a step back 3-pointer, and Randall either got a piece of it or contested it enough where Harden shot an air ball, mm-hmm. basically. And that's where Randall can excel. Last night, I can't remember who tweeted it out. It might have been Nate Duncan. But he said something along the lines of, you know, one of the reasons why post play is, and I don't even know if this was his actual quote, but the gist of it was that one of the reasons why small ball essentially is going to forever work is because, you know, switching works now, mm-hmm. right? Like, you can't basically run this pick and roll with this traditional center and then dive him into the post and then expect to get a bucket every single time,
mm-hmm.
right? Switching works. And so with Randall, if he's going to play a lot of center, he's going to get these switches, and he's got the foot speed to basically track guards
mm-hmm.
on the ball, especially. Now, get that switch and then have the point guard pass out and then start to run around through some screens or whatever, or have him go camp in the corner and then have Randall have to sort of be back to playing in between. Now, that's not going to be an area where he's going to be as strong at. But get the switch and have the guard think that, oh, like, I've got this guy on me now. Like, I'm going to just beat him. Nah, man, Randall Randle is quick and he is strong. And so a lot of these guards, you know, when they either get by you because they're so quick, or they use their quickness and then got enough strength to sort of even bigger guys that they can just sort of bump them off. You're not bumping Julius Randle off of you with some random shoulder. Like, he's too strong for that.
I completely agree. And the play that you're talking about with Harden stuck out to me especially because earlier in the game he got switched out there, and I think it was at the end of the first quarter, jumped up, contested, and then Harden drew a foul because he jumped into him.
Yes.
The play that you're talking about, I was really impressed because he jumped by him.
Yes.
So Harden was expecting, and I think the reason it was an air ball was because Harden was expecting contact that he'd be able to turn into a foul, and he was kind of caught mid-flop that he wasn't able to flop, and he just had to chuck it at the rim, and it turned into a really bad shot.
Yeah, well, the one where Randle fouled, too, he also contested a left-handed jump shooter with his left hand, which is... bad fundamentals, Julius Randle. Contest that left-handed jumper with
the right.
You got to do that with your right hand.
All right. Pete's gonna love that tidbit. If Pete's listening to that, he's gonna love that. All right. So we'll go. The next one I have here is Larry Nance Jr. needs to shoot the three at least a 33% clip this season. Otherwise, he's a great bench energy guy, which is fine.
So I would go halfway with you there. I think that shooting that percentage would be great.
Mm-hmm.
I think even more than that, he needs to take enough of those threes where percentage like that even matters.
Yeah, yeah. He passed up on a couple shots last night. That I wasn't thrilled that he passed up on.
Yeah, I think, and I've written this a fair amount about Nance over his 2 years. I really love Nance. I think if the Lakers hadn't invested a pick on Julius Randle, you know, that Nance would be the starting power forward right now. Like let's just say that in the bizarro world, Randle goes six to the Celtics and then the Lakers draft Marcus Smart, right? That if the and everything plays out exactly the same, the Lakers are still bad. Mm-hmm. They get the pick from Houston from the Jeremy Lin trade, and they draft Larry Nance. That in the end, I think Nance is that good to be you know a rotation, a solid starter at power forward in this league. He's already that good. Now, he's an older player for a second year guy, so maybe that should be expected. But I think that his main thing right now is that he just needs to push up the aggressiveness for his own offense. Just dial it up, you know, a mm-hmm. notch or two more. You know, right now his offensive aggressiveness, if he's doing anything besides running the floor or playing downhill, it's probably at like a 4 or a 5. You know, when he's going downhill, his aggression level's like at an 8 or a 9 because he's wanting the highlight play. He wants to end you mm-hmm. every single time. but you know, I still think that when he's playing 18 feet and out, he's still thinking of himself as a ball mover rather than a scorer. And I think he just needs to dial it up a little bit more. Like if he's at a 4, he needs to be at like a 6, right? Mm-hmm. Like you know, 1 or 2 extra shots a game, and preferably those aren't long 2s; they're 3s.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Yes. That was E's problem, is that he kept on shooting the long 2. All right, last one, and then we might have to come back to the second half of this list another time. Brandon Ingram should average at least half a steal and half a block per game this year. The higher, the better. Scoring, to me, isn't as important in his game.
Yes. Right now, that's a yes.
What sticks out to me regarding, and counting stats are, you know, counting stats are flawed, you know, just inherently because they're counting stats. But with Brandon, the way he plays defense, and you talked about what he does off the ball, he puts himself in really good spots to be able to affect the other team. And that's how you do it with the steals, with the blocks. He had I was surprised by how many rebounds he had last night as well. That's the kind of stuff I'm looking for from him more than scoring, which kind of takes him out of the rookie of the year stuff.
Yeah, so we'll see. The rookie of the year stuff will be interesting just because it looks like he's just going to have the ball a lot more than what it was projecting to when the idea was that Jordan Clarkson was going to start and Ingram was going to be sort of this nominal small forward, right? Which is what it was looking like through summer league and even into the first few preseason games. But now that he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot more, I think his usage has the opportunity to go up into, you know, around the 20 or 22 mark. We'll see if it actually gets that high, but he'll have that opportunity just based off the fact that he's going to have the ball. But a half a steal and a half a block, look, man, like, he can do that. I don't think he had a block against the Rockets, but I'm pretty sure he had a steal. And he's gonna get blocks just
being so based long. Off of,
just being long and tall. Like, what you mentioned Matt Moore earlier, and I remember one of the things he always used to tweet about Pau Gasol. You know, Pau would be getting these, you know, he'd have these 15 rebound games, and Matt would tweet something out about, you know, Pau Gasol still good at being tall. Right? And which always made me laugh because, like, I mean, a lot of that was true with the way that Pau would rebound, but Brandon Ingram, you know, still really good at being long. Mm-hmm. And that's how it's going to be some nights, right? Where some guard thinks that he's going to get into his body and shoot this shot, and Brandon Ingram's just basically going to say, well, you know, I've got a 9'3" standing reach. Like, I'm going to block that. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of like an eighth grader playing against, you know, some varsity senior. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm just bigger. Like, I've just got these tools that you don't really think I have.
And you talked about, like, the grown man strength that he doesn't quite have yet, but I would say that he does have some pretty good balance that somebody who's lacking in that department has. You know, generally speaking, when you think of somebody who needs to get stronger, it's because you see them kind of getting pushed off, or the angle that they can test somebody is not optimal because they're kind of getting pushed off of the angle that they should be taking. I never really noticed that with him. He kind of glides around out there. And what that allows for is, yeah, just his hand is going to be higher than you anticipate because he's so long, and he's gonna tip shots that somebody else might not.
Well, you know, I was talking about this with Nate Duncan on his season forecast podcast that he did for his Dunked On series, and we were talking about how you. How Ingram's length really didn't show up that much at Duke in terms of his steal and block numbers, and it's one of the reasons why some people who were projecting him weren't necessarily as high on him as other guys, because they're like, you know, well, yeah, he's got this amazing length, but where does it show up? It doesn't show up in blocks. It doesn't show up in steals. It doesn't necessarily even show up in rebounds, considering he played a lot of power forward when he was at Duke. And so, but during summer league and during preseason, it's shown up a lot more. And I think to speak to your point about, you know, not necessarily having strength, that's definitely, you know, that's obviously true. But he also doesn't shy away from contact, right? And so guys take it to his chest, and he's not getting bounced off. Right, like, oh, absolutely. Like, he's going flying. Mm-hmm. He sort of knows how to take a hit on both offense and on defense. You can still see where he's bothered by maybe over contacted against, right? Like, a guy is like really reaching in on him when he's dribbling. You can see him sort of shy away from that. But when he's playing aggressively and sort of going at someone on offense or going to challenge someone on defense, he's not shying away from the potential hit that's coming. And so he's able to use his length, right? Because if he's willing to sort of get into you, then a lot of times, you know, they say in boxing, well, you know, oh, you got to take away a guy's length, you got to get inside, right? Well, okay, sure. That's one thing if you're boxing and you're trying to hit a guy in the ribs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I'm going to go inside and I'm going to barrel you in the ribs. But in basketball, sure, I'm going to take it to a guy's chest, but you still got to shoot a ball over this guy, right? And so when he's extending his arm and he's now all whatever length you have is also being neutralized because you're inside his chest.
Mm-hmm.
So he's getting these blocks and he's got pretty good instincts off of the ball as someone who can sort of get in passing lanes and get deflections. And so, yeah, like it's, I think for him to help the Lakers, yeah, half a block, half a steal. Yeah, that's pretty important.
Yeah. And you think to yourself, you know, half a block, half a steal doesn't seem like that much, but over the course of a season, if you're above that range, that's 50-ish of each, you know, and that's, you're affecting, you know, and even those plays where he doesn't get the block or the steal, that means he's involved in the play leading up to it, right? If he is consistently getting the block or a steal every other game, that means in all those games, there's a good chance that he was involved defensively to put himself in a position to get those counting stats. So I don't necessarily want to see him like Iverson back in the day or Kobe back in the day would gun for those counting stats. I don't want to necessarily see that, but he should be involved enough to rack up the numbers that we talked about. All right, man. Well, this was a lot of fun. We've been talking for an hour, and I still feel like we could keep on going. That's also because we were going for a good 40 minutes before we got on the show. So one of these days we'll air the stuff before, because that tends to be better than the show. I really appreciate you hopping on, though.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Well, I would imagine we'll talk as the season goes along. I'm already, like, I don't think you have a choice in this matter. At some point, you're going to have to come back on the show.
Yeah, anytime. Next time we can have Harrison too.
I mean, do we have to, or? He made an appearance. You said that he wouldn't have wanted to hear you say that you agreed with me on a point. Like he was there. He was there in spirit.
Yes.
All right. So, as always, you can find all these shows on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen & Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Make sure you're using both promo codes, LOLakers for SeatGeek and Mac Weldon, and then Lakers10 for BetDSI.com. We will talk to everybody again soon. Have a good one. Shout out to David Rivers.
Support for this podcast comes from NetSuite. NetSuite lets you see what's going on with your business in real time, from accounting to order management and much more. You've outgrown your business management software. Let NetSuite help. Go to netsuite.com/podcast to get your free guide and find out why NetSuite is a leading business management solution for growing companies. Get up and running fast with NetSuite.